Hello, welcome to Wombats and Music. This is your host, Harry Baia, bringing you Wombats and Music from Emory and Henry College in Emory, Virginia. This is WEHC FM 90.7, your college and community station. Wombats and Music is my chance each week to bring you my favorite songs and an occasional oddball thing, which I call a wombat. And I've got a wombat tonight. I'm going to give you a reading from a book, and it's definitely a wombat. Hope you like it. And that's coming up real soon. But we're going to start off with Dolly Parton. Dolly Parton's always been one of my favorite singers, and this is kind of a different song for her in a way. It's the Mule Skinner Blues. There was a famous version of this done by a man, but this is Dolly Parton's version. I am a Lady Mule Skinner, she says. And she gets into it and has a great fiddler with her. So I hope you like it. This is Dolly Parton and Mule Skinner Blues. That was the Mule Skinner Blues by Dolly Parton and accompanied by a great fiddler. I'm going to take you down a different path for a little while. Next is one of the classic singers of all time in country music, Hank Williams. And though Hank didn't live to be very old, he certainly made a dent. And he made a lot of great recordings that influenced a lot of people. Here's one of them. It's much slower than the last. It's I'm So Lonesome I Could Cry. And there's nothing fancy in here. This is just talent or something. I don't know how he can make it so powerful, but he does.
Hear that lonesome whippoorwill He sounds too blue to fly. The midnight train is whining low. I'm so lonesome I could cry. I've never seen a night so long when time goes crawling by. The moon just went behind the clouds to hide its face and cry. When leaves begin to die, like me, he's lost the will to live. I'm so lonesome I could cry. Silence of a falling star lights up a purple sky. And as I wonder where you are, I'm so lonesome I could cry.
That was Hank Williams. I'm getting ready for my wombat here. I'm going to read to you from a book by Sheila Adams. I met Sheila Adams on two different weeks at Pinewoods Camp. Consider her a friend, although I was more of a groupie than anything else. Just a wonderful performer and singer, and she told stories. Let me read you a little bit about her. She's a seventh-generation ballad singer born and raised in the remote settlement of Sodom, way up in the mountains. Mountainous Madison County, North Carolina, which Baskin Lamar Lunsford once referred to as the last stand of the natural people. When Cecil Sharp was collecting ballads there in the early 1900s, he commented that Madison County was a place where people sang as easily as they talked. I fell in love with Frailing Banjo on first hearing it, she says. There was always something about the ballads that touched me deep inside, even back when I was knee-high to a grasshopper. So she's primarily a singer, but she also tells stories. Probably the best storyteller I've ever heard personally. And this is one of her stories. I heard her tell this story, and I just thought it was great. I wish I could get her to have her play a recording of her telling this story, but I can't. So I'm going to read it to you. This is called Bertha and the Snake Handlers. Church going was always a moving experience in the community of Sodom, especially revivals that were held out under a big tent in the summertime. These revivals offered some entertainment value as well as an excuse to socialize, and they broke up the monotony we young folks experienced through the long, hot days of any given summer. The singing was wonderful and sometimes would go on late into the night. But there was one church experience that moved more folks than any other in the history of Sodom. That was the summer the Snake Handlers came to the High Ridge Church up on Little Mountain. As soon as I heard they were coming, I headed for Bertha Franklin's. I found her sitting on her porch. Bertha was a rare find, a big, stout woman who would sit telling her stories or singing her love songs in a strong, rich voice for hours. She used her hands to punctuate her stories and songs to the point where she once said that if somebody sneaked up on her and cut them off, she'd just be mute for the rest of her days. She laughed from deep in her belly, slapping her knees, her eyes shining. She could be downright imposing whenever she chose. She was also one of those people that had no filter between her brain and her mouth. What she thought came straight out her mouth. I figured if I could talk her into going to this event, there would be stories to tell for years. "Bertha, guess what's happening at the High Ridge Church this Saturday night?" I said, plumb out of breath from all the excitement. "I already heard what foolishness is a-fixing to take place up there, and folks what would go to something like that is foolish or bored or both," she exclaimed hotly. "Now, Bertha," I said, "ain't you the least bit interested in what them folks do in one of them services? Not even just a little bit curious?" "Lord, no," she fired back at me. "Why would I be curious about a bunch of damn fools carrying on with snakes and falling down on the floor and frothing at the mouth? I got enough to do watching those fools running around up and down the hill out there every day. I don't have to go looking for idiots and fools. They somehow managed to find me." We ended the conversation right there, at least for that day. I was back the next day, though, begging and pleading for her to go. And the day after that, I spent the rest of that week trying to talk her into going. Finally, on Friday, she agreed to go. "You get yourself down here early now," she said. "You recall how long it takes me to get in and out of that damn car. I pulled into her driveway a full hour before the service was to start. There she was waiting for me on the porch, all dressed up for church, her good pocketbook gripped beneath her arm. "I had about to give up for you for coming," she hollered as I came up through the yard. "Why now, Bertha, I told you I'd be here early to get you. We've got plenty of time." "Well, it depends on whose definition of early you're going by now, don't it?" she said as she came down the steps, placing her feet carefully on the rickety boards that sagged with her weight. When we got down to the car, Bertha began her usual procedure that she practiced whenever she had to ride somewhere. She opened the door, turned, and backed up until the backs of her legs collided with the frame. Then she eased down till her fanny made contact with the seat. Next, she took her two hands and placed them securely around her left leg and lifted it into the car. Then she reached back out and lifted her right leg in. She raised herself slightly and tugged her dress out from under her person, reached back out and slammed the door hard enough to rock the car in its frame. "It is just too damn hot to wear this big old heavy dress. I swear so it's just a sticking to me like my own skin. I'm sure to burn up in that infernal church. It'll be hot enough to bake bread on the pulpit up on the side of that mountain," she quarreled as we moved off up the road toward the church. "And it's a good thing we went early. It seemed a bunch of folks had decided to receive the word that night." "Now, Bertha," I said as we entered the door of the church, "we've got our choice of seats, and we might want to sit here at the back, close to the door, so we can get out in a hurry if we need to." Bertha turned and looked at me from where she stood in the middle of the aisle, a slight smile curling her lip. "No, sir. I have come to see this darn show, and I'm a-goin' right down to the front bench so I'll have a good view and seat." And with that, she sailed on down the aisle and seated herself on the very first bench. As we settled ourselves, she started to look around. "Where do you reckon they got them snakes?" she said as she nodded to someone in one of the back rows. "Why, I want you to look. There's Jake Gosnell, and over there's Buck. Now, Lord, if that ain't a sight to behold, them two hellions inside a church." She laughed big and loud and poked me in the ribs. The church continued to fill up behind us, and there was much talking and movement as people tried to find a seat. Eventually, all seats were taken, and people started standing around the walls and spilling out into the porch and even into the dirt parking lot in front of the church. I could remember the sounds, the rustle of hymn books that were being used as fans, young uns fussing and being told to hush, the hum of chatteracks outside the open, screenless window, the low talking of people in the yard, an occasional cough from someone in the congregation, and Bertha's breathing, which had begun to sound like she was huffing. She was getting more and more agitated as time went by. "I don't see one single soul that would have the nerve to handle no snakes. I bet you this is some sort of deal to get folks like me inside a church. I'll not stand for none of that trying to save me now. I'll just not put up with these fine folks a-gathering around me a-praying and a-carrying on. There'll be trouble if they zero in on me." All this was said as she looked me straight in the eye, her lips stretched over her teeth in a sneer. I don't think you have a thing to worry about, Bertha, I answered aloud. To myself I thought, no, ma'am. Nobody in their right mind would mess with you looking the way you do right now, not if they value their life. About the time I was thinking I was going to have to leave and take Bertha home, 6 people entered the church from a side door and stood there, kind of huddled together. 2 of the men placed a large wooden box right inside the door. I bet them's the snake handlers. I ain't never seen them before. And I bet them's the snakes in them wooden boxes, she announced triumphantly. Let's get this show on the road. A man in a light green polyester pants and a pale yellow shirt, buttoned all the way to the top buttons, separated himself from the small group of strangers and walked out into the middle of the floor there at the front of the church. The entire crowd quieted down immediately, and all that could be heard was Bertha's quick, raspy breathing. The man said, "Let us pray," and proceeded to lead a lengthy prayer filled with many a "Yes, Lord," and "Help him, Jesus." When the last Amen had been uttered, Bertha looked over at me and asked out loud, "Well, when are they going to get out the snakes?" I assured her I didn't have the faintest idea and patted her knee. But I knew we were entering a different stage of difficulty when she crossed her arms over her mighty bosom and a look of defiance slid over her face. She began to bounce her leg up and down, and then the whole bench started shaking. "Is there anybody here this evening that would like to stand up and testify before I start my sermon?" the preacher asked. Directly behind Bertha, a woman stood slowly. "I got something I need to get off of my heart," the woman said softly. "Bless you, sister. You go right ahead," the preacher said. "We're all here for the same reason." Bertha snorted big and loud. I patted her knee again. "I've been a member of this here church since I was a little girl, and if you ask me, most folks are here for the wrong reasons. If you look up there at the little wooden plaque hanging to the left of a pulpit, you'll see there was just 12 people here last Sunday. Why, if you was to count all the folks inside and outside this church, there must be close to 400 here tonight. I think it's a sin and an abomination what's brought all these people here. Handling them snakes in church is a scandal. You ought to be ashamed of yourselves. Every one of you, especially you what has brought them in here. I say you ought not to do it." The congregation was dead silent as she sat down. Now, I don't know if they would have got the snakes out or not, but that woman's hind end had no more than hit the bench than the preacher made some kind of strange sound, and every head whipped around to look. He set into jerking all over. Bertha, who had been glaring over her shoulder at the woman, snapped her attention back to the front and immediately uncrossed her arms and leaned forward. The preacher was hollering and preaching in what sounded like a foreign language. He looked like he was going to have a stroke any minute. When he paused, Bertha said, "Yes, sir. They'll get the snakes out for sure now." He took to talking in tongues. The preacher by this time was foaming at the mouth, and I, for one, was getting a little concerned. Then he started shaking even harder and said something like, "Shee-ma-ma-ma." Then he screamed just like a woman. Bertha clapped her hands. "Yes, sir, that's really stirred him up. Here we go." He lunged across the room to the wooden box and threw back the top. His hands disappeared into the box, and he brought out 2 of the biggest rattlesnakes I have ever seen, and they were in full swing. A gasp went through the crowd. Bertha chose this moment to stand bolt upright, turn and face the congregation with outstretched arms, and holler out in her big ballad singing voice, "Why, hell, them's real snakes!" And the entire congregation exploded. Everyone left however they could. Parents were throwing children out the window to folks standing outside. People were screaming, praying, hollering, "Catch little Johnny," someone yelled, and I saw a little boy about 7 go flying out the window. I looked toward the door and was amazed. Benches were turned over. People were shoving and fighting, trying to get out the door, which looked to be hopelessly jammed. Bertha looked back at the preacher, who was charging around with those 2 big snakes held out at arm's length, and said, "Girl, I'm a-thinking that it's time for us to be getting out of here." From my position up on the bench where I had climbed after the snakes appeared, I pointed at the door and screamed so as to be heard, "We can't get out, Bertha. The door is blocked. And, honey, you can't get out one of them windows." She looked behind her one more time and saw a woman had joined the man and was running back and forth with two copperheads. With eyes rolling and a look that resembled for all the world a startled horse, she yelled at me, "You grab a hold of the back of my dress, girl, and I show you how we'll get out of here." Well, I grabbed hold of her, and Bertha went down that aisle like a ship in full sail. As I said, Bertha was a big woman. She shoved and pushed and hollered and cussed her way out of there and told such awful secrets on anyone that dared to block her path that I'm sure they haven't recovered to this day. We wound up being one of the first ones in the parking lot. Bertha was stepping mighty high off the ground, and when I asked her why, she said, "They might have turned some of them serpents loose on the outside to test our faith like they was a fixin' to do on the inside." I started stepping high, too. We reached the car, and I started round to the driver's side. I hadn't any more than cleared the back bumper when Bertha was in that car with the door closed. There was none of the usual posturing and positioning herself. I mean, she launched herself into that car and slammed the door in one fluid motion. Bertha didn't say a word on the ride home. I kept glancing over at her, expecting her to start cussing me at any minute. I was a nervous wreck by the time we pulled into her driveway. She opened the door and began her usual process for getting out of the car. She lifted her right leg out and placed her foot in the ground, then her left leg. Then she braced her arms on either side of the door to heave herself out. She looked back at me and said in a very soft voice, "Now, honey, I think the world of you. Why, you're just like one of my own. You're welcome to come down here and sit on my porch, and I'll sing them old love songs all night long and never sing the same one twice. But don't you ever, ever ask me to do something like this never again." And I said meekly, "Yes, ma'am." And I never did. So that was Bertha and the Snake Handlers, as told by Sheila K. Adams from Sodom, North Carolina. Well, the next song up is a religious song from the South. I thought that ought to fit, although it's not quite as peppy as that story. This is Glory Land by the Marshall Family. Probably the same vintage and flavor as the Snake Handlers, but a quiet, preacher-like song.
Oh, if you have friends in Glory Land, who left because of pain, thank God of they'll suffer not again. Then weep not, friends, I'm going home. Up there we'll die no more. No coffins will be made up there. No graves on that bright shore. The lame will walk in Glory Land. The blind up there will see. The deaf in dumb will talk to me. Then weep not, friends, I'm going home. Up there we'll die no more. No coffins will be made up there. No graves on that bright shore. There'll be no sun in Glory Land. The moon and stars won't shine, for Christ himself himself is right up there. He reigns on love divine. Then weep not, friends, I'm going home. Up there we'll die no more. No coffins will be made up there. No graves on that bright shore.
That was Glory Land by the Marshall Family. Well, we're in a gospel mood, so let's have another. This is Where the Soul of Man Never Dies, and this is a song I sing and like a lot. This version is a little different from the one I know, but it's the basic song. It's The Soul of Man Never Gonna Die. This is by Cody Shuler and the Pine Mountain Railroad. I think it fits perfectly with the mood we're in. And after this, we aren't going to have a lot more gospel today, but we'll have some great songs. But here's one more to fit the mood with Bertha and the Snake Handlers.
Never dies.
No sense.
was Where the Soul Never Dies by Cody Shuler and the Pine Mountain Railroad. You're listening to Wombats and Music, and this is your host, Harry Baia, bringing you Wombats and Music on Monday nights at 7 o'clock, 7 to 8 Monday nights. And we're coming to you from Emory and Henry College in Emory, Virginia, WEHC FM 90.7, your college and community station. And it's my chance each week to bring you my favorite songs. Here comes another. This is Dolly Parton again. We had a Dolly Parton number earlier. This one's called Here You Come Again. And it was a 1977 hit for Dolly Parton. Her first significant crossover went over to the regular hit parade off the country charts and was top in the country charts and got up to number 3 in pop songs. Also won her several awards that year. It's one of her few hit songs she didn't write herself. This one was written by Barry Mann and Cynthia Weil. Most Dolly's hits were ones that she has personally written, but not this one.
Right in the door, just like you've done before, and wrap my heart round your little finger. Here you come again, just when I'm about to make it work without you. You look into my eyes and lie those pretty lies, and pretty soon I'm wondering.
Here You Come Again by Dolly Parton. Next up is a song by Guy Clark. It's called Arizona Star, and it's kind of a community situation. I infer that there is a bar scene where people hang out, and into the scene comes a woman who's just quite the flash, quite the thing, and they call her the Arizona Star. I'll read you a little bit of the lyrics to get a feel for it. It was in the town of Nashville in the year of 75. This Arizona Star, she just fell out of the sky. She was shining like a diamond. She had tombstones in her eyes. She liked drinking. She liked smoking. She liked dancing in the aisles. She was a prima donna, pre-Madonna. Hard time Southern belle. Man, she should have been an actress. Oh, she played the part so well. She might have been a singer, but you really couldn't tell. She was the Arizona Star, and she was born to give 'em hell. Anyway, it's a song about somebody who entered into a small community and shone brightly. I infer that she maybe wasn't there for all that long, But anyway, here's a story by Guy Clark, Arizona Star.
T'was in the town of Nashville in the year of 75. This Arizona star, she just fell out of the sky. She was shining like a diamond, she had tombstones in her eyes. She liked drinking, she liked smoking, she liked dancing in the aisles. She was a prima donna, part-time Southern belle. Man, she should have been an actress, oh, she played the part so well. She might have been a singer, but you really couldn't tell. She was Arizona star and she was born to give them hell. When you're cool, the sun shines all the time, so she always kept her shades on to keep from going blind. She was cool, she was out there so far, she was nothing less or nothing more than the Arizona star. Sword and wore purple tights and they hung out every night. Oh, I'm talking about a circus man, I'm talking about three rings, and there was four or five clowns in a washing machine. Oh, she never met a stranger as far as I could tell. She was the Arizona star and Jim McGuire, he knew her well. She made real an oxymoron, she made mirrors, she made smoke. She had a curveball that wouldn't quit and a girlfriend for a joke. When you're cool, sun shines all the time, so she always kept her shades on to keep from going blind. She was cool, she was out there so far, she was nothing less or nothing more than Arizona star. She was cool, she was out there so far, she was nothing less, nothing more than Arizona star.
That was the Arizona Star by Guy Clark. Now we're going to jump back to 1954. This is from the play The Pajama Game. It's called Hey There. It was sung by Rosemary Clooney. And I remember it well. It's a very introspective song. It's one of those songs that kind of takes you somewhere in your mind and just leaves you there. I've always liked this song. So here's Hey There by Rosemary Clooney from 1954.
Lately when I'm in my room all by myself, in the solitary gloom I call to myself. Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes, love never made a fool of you. You used to be too wise. Hey there, you on that high-flying cloud, though he won't throw a crumb to you, you think someday he'll come to you. Better forget him. him with his nose in the air. He has you dancing on a string. Break it and he won't care. Won't you take this advice I hand you like a mother? Or are you not seeing things too clear? Are you too much in love to hear? Is it all going in one ear and out the other? Hey there, you with the stars in your eyes.
Are you talking to me?
Love never made a fool of you.
Not until now.
You used to be too wise.
Yes, I was once.
Will you take this advice I hand you like a mother? Or am I not seeing things too clear? Are you just too far gone to hear? Is it all going in one ear and out the other?
That was Hey There by Rosemary Clooney from 1954. We're going 2 years forward now to 1956. This is Love is Strange by Mickey and Sylvia. A number of people recorded this, and a number of people claim to have written different parts of it. It's known for its guitar riff. I like it because of the interchange, the talk between Mickey and Sylvia. And the song was revived back when the movie Dirty Dancing came out. They used this song in one of the practice scenes. It sort of brought the song back to life for a year or so. It's one of my favorites.
And if he doesn't answer?
Oh, lover boy.
And if he still doesn't answer?
I simply say, baby, oh, baby, my sweet baby, you're the one. Baby. Sweet baby, you're
That was Mickey and Sylvia with Love is Strange. Next is something a little more recent. This is from the 70s. This is from 1974. So I Haven't Got Time for the Pain by Carly Simon. I remember the first time I heard this, the first time I really heard it, I was hypnotized, mesmerized. I thought this was just a great, great thing. And I still feel that way, but there's nothing like the first time. Perhaps if you've never heard this song, you can enjoy the experience. Although, as we all know, different songs speak to different people. So who knows if this is your song. But here it is, Haven't Got Time for the Pain by Carly Simon. I think it's a transcendent song. It's how to transcend the pain, how to live an enlightened life and not be burdened by everything.
Time for the pain. I haven't got room for the pain. I haven't the need for the pain. Not since I've known you. You showed me
Haven't Got Time for the Pain by Carly Simon from 1974. Do any of us have time for the pain? If there's some way to do what she's doing and just sort of step beyond it, do it. Next up is a novelty song, at least I think it is. It's called, I probably shouldn't tell you the name, it's kind of more fun just to listen. I won't tell you the name, I'll be mean. listen to the introduction and see if you can tell where the song is going. It's by Mac Davis. It's obviously a live performance. And once the song gets rolling, you'll know exactly what the title is. It's kind of a catchy title. Here we go, Mac Davis.
Back a few months ago, I was headlining at a great big nightclub. And he put me up a couple of days early. I came in a couple of days early, and they put me up at what they call the Star Suite. Now, here I am, headliner in one of the biggest nightclubs in the country, and I wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning in this Star Suite all by myself. Yeah, that's what I said, aw. But I did what I've always done, man, to cheer myself up. I picked up my guitar, I sat down, I wrote me a little song. Now this is how it feels to be alone at the top of the hill and trying to figure out why. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking each day. To know me is to love me. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble, but I'm doing the best that I can. I used to have a girlfriend, but I guess she just couldn't compete with all of these love-starved women who keep clamoring at my feet. Well, I probably could find me another, but I guess they're all in awe of me. Who cares? I never get lonesome, 'cause I treasure my own company. Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. Can't wait to look in the mirror, can't wait to look in the mirror.
Help me out now, come on.
I get better looking each day. To know me is to what? To know me is to love me. Must be a hell of a man. I must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard. Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're doing what? We're doing the best that we can. I guess you could say I'm a loner, cowboy, outlaw, tough and proud. Well, I could have lots of friends if I wanted, but then I wouldn't stand out from the crowd. Some folks say that I'm egotistical. Hell, I don't even know what that means. I guess it has something to do with the way that I fill out my skin tight blue jeans. Whoa. Come on, where's all the kickers in here? Oh Lord, it's hard to be humble when you're perfect in every way. When you're perfect in every way. Can't wait to look in the mirror. I can't wait to look in the mirror, 'cause I get better looking. I get better looking each day. To know me is to what? To know me is to love me. Must be a hell of a man. Must be a hell of a man. Oh Lord, it's hard. Lord, it's hard to be humble. What are we doing? We're doing the best that we can. One more time. What are we doing? We're doing the best that we can. Give yourself a hand.
So now you know the title of that song. It's Hard to Be Humble by Mac Davis. And I get a kick out of that. He's all alone in the motel room feeling sorry for himself, so he writes that song, parodying his own life and making fun of himself. You've been listening to Wombats and Music, and I'm your host, Harry Baya. I bring you this show on Monday nights from 7 to 8 from WEHC FM 90.7. I'm at Emory and Henry College here in Emory, Virginia, and once a week I record this show and play it for you on Monday nights. I get a big kick out of it. I love picking out the songs. And tonight we had a wombat. I did a reading for you. I'll do more of those, especially if I get any feedback. If you'd like to email me, my email address is hbaya, H for Harry, and baya at EHC, Emory Henry College, ehc.edu. I'd love to hear from you. So I want to wish you all a good week and encourage you to do what I encourage you to do every week, and that is to celebrate most joyously our being here at all. Goodbye.